the Bristol Media Podcast, in association with BusinessLink.
Hello, I'm Mike Bennett, Chief Exec of Bristol Media, and welcome to the first of a special three-part podcast around growing and developing creative businesses. Over the next few weeks, we'll be inviting business owners, serial entrepreneurs, and experts to share their personal experience and advice on starting, growing, and selling a business. Today, though, we're focusing on the very first steps of that ladder, business startup. So, over the next 40 or so minutes, we'll be talking everything from business plans, bootstrapping, taking risks, money, marketing, right the way through to office space, bagging your first client, and what you really need to do to ensure you make it through the first few years in business. And to give us their personal insights into all of those challenges, I'm joined by an eclectic group of individuals who've all recently started their own creative business. So, hello to Caroline Harris of Spirit Public Relations.
Hello.
Richard Wilson of Mobile Pie.
Hi.
Vicky Brophy from animation company Wonky Films.
Hello.
Dan Pidcock from digital agency Glow Creative.
Hi there.
And Matt Lochran from The White Balance, a CGI and post-production company.
Hi.
Guys, first of all, general question. Why did you start your business? Dan.
Well, my main reason for starting a business really is I have no qualifications, so no one would employ me. So I started offering my design skills to mostly friends and family and people I knew, and they started wanting to pay me. So after many years of doing that kind of part-time after my day job, I've decided, look, let's do this properly. Let's go out and see if we can make a living from it. About 3 years after becoming a freelancer, I met my business partner, now Liam Summers, and we joined together to try and build a proper agency. It went from just a case of not being able to get into the industry without any qualifications to a point of actually just really enjoying being your own boss and running an agency.
Brilliant. Matt, what about you?
Well, it's a bit of a different strategy from our part. Myself and my partner Leanne were at design agencies in London and decided to take a bit of a break, and we went to Australia for 4 months. Whilst we were out there, we sort of devised the plan and set the wheels in motion for The White Balance, really. Mostly from the point of view that we felt in a larger creative agency we couldn't get enough of our input into the process, so we kind of felt that if we have our own business, then we can have full control over the work we produce and the clients we work for.
Vicky?
I think, yeah, having full control, having freedom, doing things your own way, if you believe in a certain way of working. I think from a young age, I always wanted to start a business, but my problem was I didn't know what I wanted to do that business in. So I had to work at other companies and figure out what my strengths and weaknesses were, what I was truly interested in, before the right thing sort of felt like it was happening. And that's when I sort of took the plunge, met the right people, and realised there was an opportunity in the market that we should take the most of, really.
Caroline?
I would echo to some extent what Vicky says about doing things your own way, and I'd worked in agencies and a freelancer for many years, and then it was partly that the opportunity came along, the point in the market, and I got to a point where I was working with freelancers and I either sized up or I sized down. And once you've started working with some of the bigger, more interesting clients, it's incredibly hard to go back. Mm. So I thought, let's take a go at creating something that I want to do and to work the way I want to work.
And Rich, what about you and Mobile Pie? How did that come about?
Well, myself and my business partner Tom were at university together, at the University of Bristol, and we're quite lucky in it. It was a very in the final year, it was a very business focused course. We were all sort of encouraged to look at entrepreneurship. We had to put together business plans, and so that sort of set the seeds of setting up our own company. We both saw mobile as being the future thing, and after a couple of years at a digital agency in Bristol, I left and went travelling and came back, and that was a perfect opportunity to give it a go. I had nothing really to risk. I didn't have a mortgage or anything like that, and it's just a perfect opportunity. And thankfully, you know, since then, mobile's gone really big.
It sounds, I mean, a few of you mentioned the freedom to do it yourself and to go on your own. Is that important?
Obviously, being able to choose your own hours and choose the projects you want to do and the ones you don't. Obviously, at first, you'll take anything, I think. That's true for most people. But to be able to really kind of control your own destiny and not have to worry whether you're going to get that pay rise or that promotion, it's up to you to go out and get that work.
Caroline, interesting. You mentioned already that you worked freelance for a period of time, and then you decided to take the leap into developing and starting a limited company.
Yeah.
What made you think in that way?
Well, I think it was partly to do with the sorts of clients that we were going to be working for, and I wanted to make I was quite well known within a sort of small marketplace, and I wanted really to signal that we were no longer me plus a few others, but that we were an agency. And I think the limited status partly conferred that, partly to do with size, but also if you're doing any kind of government tendering, it really makes a difference that you're seen not as a sole trader, but that you've kind of grown up, I suppose.
Richard, you mentioned in your introduction that MobilePi started just after you came back from travelling, and you'd spent time in a digital agency. But you actually started the company in the Pervasive Media Studio, which is a sort of incubation type space. For those listeners who don't know anything about it, can you explain what the PM Studio is and how it helped MobilePi get started?
Yeah, we're very lucky that literally when we started to go full time, PM Studio just started. So we were able to get space there, and it's a very unique place. It's a sort of collaborative workspace for creative artists and technologists to come together and look at how technology could be used by everyone in a pervasive way. So it was initially set up between Watershed and Hewlett-Packard with money from regional agencies. And there's a very great mix of creative artists who use modern technology such as GPS, such as mobile, to create new experiences for people. So it really sort of play to our skills, because we're not only interested in the technology but the sort of mobile side of things, but our backgrounds in and our interest is in the games industry. So look at how we can create new creative experiences for people using that technology was great for us.
Do you think that camaraderie of being in a similar place with like-minded people actually helped you get the business off the ground?
Oh, completely. Not only were we able to do sort of commercial work with people who perhaps had contacts but didn't have the technical skills to bring it about, which thankfully we did have, but it also let us bounce ideas off people. And there's so many sort of new ways of thinking came out of that studio. And even though we sort of graduated away as we've grown, we still regularly come back to bounce ideas off people.
We've been receiving questions from other Bristol Media members about business startups, and one of the most popular questions from a lot of the guys who I guess is starting to think about developing a business was the value of a business plan in this modern, technologically advanced new sort of economy. Who put a business plan together before they started their business?
We didn't have a business plan as such. We had more of a plan of how we wanted to work as a creative company and what sort of services we wanted to offer and how we could become unique. And we found that that drove us a lot more than sitting down, as both myself and my partner Leanne are creative people. That drove us a lot more, in suffice to say that the size of the figures and things, although an important part of business, we were driven more from the creative aspect of the work, which I think would reflect in what we have as a business plan.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I looked around when I asked that question and there seemed to be more blank faces. I mean, did anybody write a business plan?
We did, yeah.
Okay, go on, Dan.
When me and Liam were planning everything, we decided to, you know, get down exactly what our dreams for the business would be, what our ethos, what our values would be. The hardest bit we found was doing the financial part of it. I suppose neither of us are particularly financially minded people, but so we just simply said, this is the minimum we can live on, so we need to get that amount. This is what we'd like to have, and ideally this is really what we would dream to have. I'd like, you know, looking back on it, we have actually found it quite useful, because we've ticked off a lot of the things we wanted to do. And also looking at the financial one, we're actually going closer to the one that we dreamed of, though we're not rich by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, you're touching on an interesting point, really, because there is a belief within business that if you actually write it down, it often has a chance of happening.
Yeah. We did a similar thing with clients that we wanted to work for. When we actually started, we were lucky enough to go on a Nesta-funded course called Insight Out. And that was a sort of a way course, and it really helped us put together, you know, what the company was about, who we wanted to work for, and how we were going to achieve that. And it was great. We didn't have a formal written down business plan, but that really helped put together almost like a mission statement for the company. And it's not set in stone. It's something that we come back, we review, things change. Certainly in the field we're in, with mobile, it was only a year ago that, you know, Apple's App Store was launched, and since then it's changed everything. So you have to keep on your toes. And for that reason, I think we've put off, writing down a business plan and almost framing it. It has to be organic for us.
I would echo that. Yeah, and we did the same sort of exercise about trying to work out, who you wanted to work for and exactly how you wanted to work. And you're right to some extent, Mike, about writing it down. But I think some of it's thinking it as well. I think perhaps, a year ago, 9 months ago, we sat down and said we wanted to work more in the environmental sector because it kind of aligned our personal values and where we wanted to work in business. And if I look at where we are now, that's happened. And so I think, it's purposeful and you can't write it down and then shelve it. You actually have to live it. Yeah. And that's really important.
Let's talk about money, because a lot of people out there think you need money to start a business. How have you got your business off the ground?
Well, we actually didn't have any money to start with. The reason we came back from Australia when we started the company was that we ran out of money. So it doesn't make much sense to start a business from, but we kind of came back and bought a few workstations on finance, and that was kind of our immediate goal, really, was to we've borrowed the money to get these on finance. It's not a traditional bank loan, but then that acted as a catalyst to get us working, really. And after a few jobs, we thought, well, this is kind of going to work and we can do this. So then we kind of followed on from there, really.
Do you think that's a better way to do it? Start a company and almost like bootstrap yourself to the top to make it work without money, VCs or bank lending, and just do whatever you have to do to get it off out of the starting blocks?
I think it depends on the kind of business, but I do think in the creative businesses where a lot of what we're selling is our brains and our time, then actually you don't necessarily have a vast array of startup costs. It's about getting the right people. And I know every business says that, but it's even more important, I think, in the kind of businesses we're in. And there may get to be points where one is growing that you do need capital, but I think the type of business we are, it's not a prerequisite.
It also depends how quickly you need to get to market, I think. If you see an opportunity and you have to take it, you need the money there and then, perhaps. But with us, we're quite happy to be organic, gradually grow in our own time, and we don't mind if we're still a small company after a couple of years. It's the long-term view we take, and therefore it's having that long-term vision that you keep working towards.
Everybody's in communication in some way, shape or form. How did you take the message that you were now in business out to the wider world, tell people you were there and get in front of people and market yourself to prospective clients? What were the first steps you took to tell the world that you were now in business?
For me, it was Bristol Media all the way. I went to all the different Bristol Media events, the events at Goldbrick House the last Tuesday of the month. And literally just went around the room and shook everyone's hands, passed out business cards, and just did that constantly. Didn't matter if they were applicable or not, if they were in a film industry. It didn't have any direct, link up to us. But it was still important, not only to get it right in my head what I had to say to people, to practice my elevator pitch about what the company did, but you never know who knows who, especially in media. Everyone's sort of connected somehow. So for us, that was really important. And go along to all the events I could, Southwest Screen events, UK Trade Investment events. It was all great experience.
Just getting yourself out there and constantly promoting yourself.
I think definitely that's the case. I think when we started, we actually were in a position where we had a few good clients from the off that we had brought with us from London. I think looking back at it now, we sat too long with those clients, and then once we got on the scene in Bristol and we realised that we didn't have to be in London or Manchester like we were doing a lot of work back then. Bristol has this fantastic network of clients here, and as soon as we started pushing ourselves in those areas, we've just seen the benefits, really.
Yeah, and I think it's right what you say about connections, because actually I started my career in Bristol at Watershed Media Centre, and talking about the PM studio. And I think for us, it was to some extent, it was about trying to change perception. So we did the kind of physical thing of actually having a launch party, which is fairly scary, but people did come. And website has actually been amazingly important to us, and seems to say the right things. Certainly people come out of the blue to us, but the networking thing is absolutely critical as well. And it's choosing the right networking. I don't see, for me, those kind of general early in the morning, 7 o'clock, business network things don't work for us. It's about finding like-minded companies where you might work on projects together.
a lot of our business has come from London and further afield. And what we find is that we'll go to large events once or twice a year where we know some of the big players are. And nothing will happen straight away necessarily, but after 2 or 3 years and they keep seeing you, they start realising you are an established company at that point. There's a bit more trust, they've got to know you better. And it takes time, but those contacts are now starting to come through for us, and people are now contacting us saying, we'd like to see what you've been up to, we'd like you to come in to see us.
One of the things that we found was that you don't see results instantly. You know, you think you go to these networking events and pick up work, and it doesn't work like that. It's about getting to know people and constantly building a relationship with them. And then eventually, like you said, the work does come around once the trust is there and the relationship's in place.
You've all come up with an idea, taking it to the next stage and starting businesses. Do you consider yourself entrepreneurs?
I think entrepreneurship is a difficult word when you're dealing with creative industries, because from the way that we see it, a good creative company is driven by a creative director or somebody that gives very strong creative direction. So that's how we see ourselves. Rather than making a big entrepreneurial business, we're actually just really passionate about doing what we do, and we want to do it as well as we can for our clients. And I think that's our drive, becoming a big entrepreneur.
I think that I would really echo that, actually, and I think possibly what made me hesitate, because I sort of am looking around and I think most of you have done it with others, I sort of did it on my own, and I think was the realisation that actually I didn't have to mirror the model I'd seen elsewhere. I could do it in my own way and adhere to some of that ethos.
How do you balance doing the things that you love? And you've all said you've all had experience and you have a passion in your chosen field, but how do you balance continuing to do that and to grow that business and spending the time creating against doing VAT returns and making sure there's enough cash coming in the door? I mean, do creative people make good business managers?
I think one of the important stages we took was to get an accountant and a bookkeeper, and once that
get someone else to do it, you know, for you.
That was a life-changing stage for us, and the constant worry of, oh my god, I need to do my VAT return, I need to fill out my tax forms. Once that was lifted, it was like a weight had gone, and you could get back to doing what we actually enjoyed doing.
It's really important to know what you're good at, and you know, if it's not project management, getting a project manager. If it's not accountancy, getting an accountant. And when we first looked at getting an accountant, it was quite tricky. We sort of, you know, looked at usual sort of places and went around Bristol. You're getting a 3-hour consultation with each of them, getting a little bit further about sort of understanding what we needed. But it was only when we sort of contacted Business Link, in fact, where they actually put us in touch with a selection of accountants, all of which were really good. And that's how we found an accountant who just fitted our company exactly. And we've been really happy with her.
Finding
since.
The right accountant really helps, and especially I think one that has some business experience as well, because ours has been really helpful actually almost as a financial director, talking about the next stage of growth, advising on, you know, things that you might not think an accountant would normally do, but broader than just the returns. And that's been really helpful to us.
So far, what's been the biggest buzz? What's been your most satisfying moment of this journey so far?
The most satisfying for me definitely was when a client came in talking about their new website, and so I've got a few ideas here, some other website I like, and two of them were mine. I was like, well, we should be able to produce something just as good as that very easily, and it was just that was a very proud moment.
We recently heard that the animation that we worked on for a BBC show at the start of the year has been shortlisted by the BBC for a BAFTA. So that was pretty big news, and that definitely went well.
Vicky,
I think the first time you see your credit on TV is quite nice, when you've started a company and you see the logo up there and you're like, I'm glad we got the logo right and we got the name right. I guess the last one for us was at number 10 last month, which is good. Got invited with 200 companies from around the UK, small business companies. So it was nice to be recognised. I don't know how that happened, but that was quite good.
Rich? For us, I think it was being picked for the Media Innovation Award Trophy 2008 to win the overall thing as a company that only started up a couple of months before. It was brilliant, and it really gave us confidence to go forwards and keep up with it.
I think for us it wasn't one single moment, but it was a realisation that actually we are now being asked to pitch with companies that are much bigger than us. So talking about being a small company that do big jobs, that has suddenly come true. Mm. And you look around and we're by far the smallest, but I don't think there's any bad thing in that. Yeah.
And finally, one last question to everybody. What do you know now that you wish you'd known when you were starting out?
I think for me, it's just how much help there is out there that's free. You know, if you find the what taxes you have to pay too confusing, people can help you for free. And it's places like Business Link, like Bristol Media, like South West Green, are absolutely brilliant. And sort of never be afraid to ask for help. I think that's...
And other businesses as well.
I wish I'd started earlier, actually, in some ways. Mm. You know, you have to get the sort of the balls up to do it in the first place, because it is a bit of a jump and a leap. And I think I could have done what I'm doing now a few years earlier, and it'd been interesting to know where we are now, but maybe the times would have been different and you never know, but I'm glad I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, I would say being braver, actually, and realising that this could have been done some time ago. But I do think sometimes it is a matter also of it takes time to work out exactly who you are and exactly what it is you want to do. And I was making a living while I was working that out, but yes, perhaps a while ago I could have just dived in quicker.
I suppose it's all about confidence, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a confidence thing. I think the size doesn't matter, it's quality.
And on that note, I think we'll leave it there. Thanks, guys.
You're listening to the Bristol Media Podcast in association with Business Link.
So after listening to what our startup businesses had to say, we're now joined by Mark Mason, who's going to be with us actually for the next three podcasts. Mark co-founded ad agency Mason Zimbler, which he sold last year, and is now embarking on a brand new mobile venture. Hello, Mark.
Hi.
Roger Wilkins, startup manager from Business Link.
Hello.
Nick Sturge, who runs SetSquared, a University of Bristol-supported incubator for technology-related startups.
Hi.
Carl Dean, partner of accountancy firm Smith & Williamson.
Hi.
Jonathan Poole, commercial partner from legal firm Thring Townsend, Lee & Pembertons.
Hello.
And Mick Dickinson from Marketing Donut, a specialist marketing website that offers help and advice to SMEs.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us, gents. Mark, if I can come to you first, having listened to what you've just listened to and gone through it once, what resonates from the stories and the experience that, that the startup companies were talking about earlier?
I think there's a lot of things that the guys said, which definitely happened to me when I first started. I mean, the initial thing that happened to me and my business partner at the time, Simon Zimbler, was the fact that we were working for a company and we were just fed up with working for somebody else. And I think most of them said it was that independence that they crave for to actually to do it their way. And that very much happened to me.
But I mean, they did talk about the freedom it gave and the opportunities, which of course is true. But starting a business is bloody hard work, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I get asked by quite a lot of people, you know, how did I start it? And, you know, what do you need to do? And there is a certain amount of bravery that goes into starting any business. Some more than others. I think some agencies, it's an interesting one where some people have a good client, for example. They've got a good relationship with that client and they decide to leave and the client goes with them. And that's actually quite easy. That's happened to me the very first time. And you're starting straight off from the blocks. You've got an account, you started to work. So that's certainly one way to do it.
Roger, stats show the percentage of startup businesses increase when there's a recession. I guess mainly because people are made redundant and they might have a little bit of cash to invest in a startup. Is it good to start a business during a recession?
It's certainly not a bad thing. And there's many advantages to starting a business in a recession. You can drive your costs down, for example. And you tend to focus more on the more important parts of the business, and you focus on not wasting money and making every penny count effectively. So you end up with a much more solid business in the middle of it, and then as you come out of the recession, you're much better placed then to grow that business and to survive in the marketplace during the good times.
I think that everything that Roger said is correct, and what you see is less
perhaps fly-by-night businesses, more good quality businesses, and certainly in my space where investment is a crucial aspect, more investors looking for the good quality solution. So if you do get it off the ground, the chances are you've got the right partners on board.
It was interesting. You guys obviously sat in the room next door listening to what the guys, the startup guys, had to say. And I felt the shivers as they all admitted, well, all but one admitted to not having put pen to paper and developed a business plan. Is that a good thing? Do you buy into that as a way of starting things and going about things?
Well, I think it was one of the interesting things that came out for me was that so few of them felt they needed any money to start up. Of course, one of the key reasons on a business plan is that you can convey what it is you're planning to do to somebody to persuade them to put some money into the business.
Actually, when they talked about what they did have, they'd all sat down and they'd written a mission statement or a vision about what they wanted to have. And several of them mentioned that they'd actually done some sort of broad cash forecasting about what they needed to do. So whilst they didn't recognise the thing, didn't have business plan written at the top, they did actually have a business plan. And I don't think there's a single format for that. It just very much depends on who it is that that business plan is for.
In many ways, it sounded to me as if they had a sort of living, breathing business plan and freed from the sort of management asking them to report back. You know, they were able to work on their business rather than in it, and they were doing that on a sort of weekly, monthly, daily basis is the way it came across.
It's about having a plan for the business as much as a business plan.
I think also sometimes when you're starting a business, people talk about a business plan and you conceive it in your mind. You can almost see this document, the heavy document bound, and it's almost enough to put you off thinking about planning, when actually it needn't be that at all. Just a series of milestones and things to really consider hard when you're looking to start a business.
I think one of the biggest reasons for failure in business is because companies don't focus stick to their knitting, I should say. And a business plan can help them do that. It can define what the brand is in the company, what the company stands for, what they believe in. And if they stick to that, then people start to understand who they are. So customers start to, over a period of time, recognise what their business does and then come to them. And on the back of that, it's a lot of new business startups. It's about doing very consistent marketing of yourself, not expecting to do a direct mail piece and suddenly all the orders come in, but doing it over a long period of time. Some of the new startups were saying how that started to happen with them. They've established their brand, the business is starting to come in, but it does take time to establish that.
And it's what happens a lot if a group of people start a business as a team, you can have different expectations and perhaps uncommunicated expectations. So defining as a common goal helps you be clear and avoid some rather painful pitfalls and understand where the gaps are in your team.
Nick, you run a very successful business incubator up at the university called Set Squared, and Rich certainly talked about the benefits of being part of that type of setup brings to him personally and his business. Do places like incubators like Set Squared actually help to accelerate the growth of startup businesses and therefore result in a greater degree of success?
Absolutely. We call ourselves the Set Squared Business Acceleration Centre because we believe we accelerate, so it does what it says on the tin. Our brief with Set Squared is to accelerate early stage, high tech, high growth businesses. But a lot of what we do is common to any sector of businesses, be it technology, be it creative, be it anything else. And then perhaps the most important thing about what we do is bringing experience to bear early in a business, so that there's no reinvention of the wheel. And the second thing is very much about encouragement and sanity checking and helping people. And remember, it's people that run businesses rather than the products. It's people who need encouragement, sharing their concerns with other people, be they other entrepreneurs, be they people who've been through it, done it, or got the sector experience, sharing their problems with other people in a very rapid access environment. So in terms of success, we see almost all, there's a very, very low proportion of companies that have been through Set Squared that have failed. And there's plenty of research that says that any company that has asked for support, taken on support, has done a lot better. Our view is that if you start off your business in the garden shed on your own, you're far more likely to fail than if you go into an environment where there are people around to ask and share your problems with.
Roger, Nick touched on an interesting thing there about the importance of having support and guidance. And in the early days of starting a business, it can be quite a lonely thing to do. So that support network is incredibly, incredibly valuable and important.
Yes, indeed it is. And I think it whilst where you take your advice from is to some extent important, to a great extent it's not. It's about taking advice from people who have done it before or know what it's like. And that advice is available and freely available from many places. Nick's organisation does some, my own does some. I'd obviously suggest people come talk to us, but I would.
That's Business Link.
That's Business Link. But there's plenty of other places that advice is available from as well. And I would suggest that people go to as many places as they can. You can never have too much advice. You can reject it if you don't like what you hear or if you hear something that's out of kilter with what everybody else is telling you. You can challenge that yourself and go with the advice that you think is right for you.
Carl, it wasn't a particularly hot topic in our earlier session, but we hear examples and stories of startups who are seeking funding, finding it incredibly difficult to be able to raise the cash from, I guess, the conventional ways, knocking on the high street banks. They're, in spite of what they're communicating, they're really not open for business. What advice would you give to anybody listening around how to access those kinds of funds and startup seed funding?
Well, I think you're right. It was interesting to hear what the earlier panel said about a need for money. So before you can get into that, I think the first thing to say is if you're going to seek finance, be sure you know why you want it and what you're going to do with it. And if you don't need it, don't go looking for it. It's right to say the banks aren't in the market. They're tending to concentrate on their existing client base at the moment, and they're very difficult to persuade. Traditionally, there's always been the family money or own money for startups. But I think that one source we currently see that seems to be underutilised, I'd be interested to hear what everybody else says, is that of the Business Angel Network. You know, they, particularly in the current market, there are a lot of networks out there, things like Swain, that are looking for businesses. They're looking for good management and good ideas. They will, maybe this comes back to the business plan point earlier, they will always be looking for what's the visibility of their exit and, you know, what does the future hold? But in addition to the funding they can provide, they can bring a bit of that grey air on board as well. They've been there, done it, and a bit of the strategic advice.
So for anybody listening who doesn't know what a business angel is, can you just explain who they are, where they are, and how you can track them down?
Business angel is somebody with some independent wealth, high net worth individuals, who perhaps, if you like, as part of a hobby, they're looking for companies to invest in because they have an interest in making their money work for them. But they're also interested in business and seeing young ideas and people with ideas succeed, businesses succeed. And the networks that we see, I mentioned Swain, which is the Southwest Area Investor Network. They club together, the individuals together. And if you approach Swain, they will invite companies that they think are valid propositions to go along to present to panels of investors. Perhaps a little bit like the Dragon's Den scenario, but without quite the
aggression,
the television attitude, if you like. And really what you need to go to that stage, you need to be investor ready, if you like, the business. You have to have a very clear idea of what, I go back to the point I raised earlier, what you want and what you want to do. That's key. If you're going to get somebody to invest money in your business, you've got to convince them that they can be confident that you're going to use it properly, that they can see a return.
I would say the angel market stroke high net worth. So you have angel networks and you have individuals who operate alone. It's about finding the right investor for you. A business only creates value and only grows driven by the passion and the energy and the vision of the founder. If you take the wrong investor on board who doesn't understand what you're trying to achieve, and this perhaps can back to the plan for the business again, but if they don't understand and are not aligned with your interests, then you may have problems further down the line.
Jonathan, it's probably fair to say, and certainly speaking to the guys earlier, that things like contracts, shareholders, agreements, getting your heads around employment law probably aren't going to be on the priority list for young startups.
Well, certainly if an employee has developed intellectual property, has got a lot of confidential information about your business, and if they leave and set up in competition with you, as I'm sure a few listeners will have experienced, then you might wish that you had got a restrictive covenant in place that was enforceable and that you'd taken advice on whether it would be enforceable. So really, the answer is do it before anything like that happens. Obviously, everyone goes into this as a startup with a lot of faith and trust, and it's important you get people you do believe in and have got a similar vision and you do trust. But over time, things can change and the business changes. And, you know, we've all experienced around this table people with businesses where there has been a breakup. As to sort of shareholder agreements, that's to protect the value of your investment. And similarly, if you either want to force out someone who's not performing or you are forced out yourself, you know, there's been plenty of cases of two ganging up against one. It's key what is in a shareholder's agreement will determine how much you're going to get paid for your shares if you exit. And if that isn't done properly, thought about, and everyone's understood it, it can cause problems.
But they're quite expensive documents to put in place, aren't they? If you're a new business who's fundamentally focused on driving the business, getting business in, keeping afloat, as many startups are, it's quite a luxury to go and spend thousands of pounds with a legal firm.
I do accept that. And maybe you just need to focus on the provisions around exiting employees who've got shares or fellow founders who've got shares. You can leave a lot of the rest of it perhaps to later. One of the things I would stress, however, is that if there are a group of founders, then if you are looking to incorporate the business, I think there are good, sensible reasons for doing that earlier, whether or not you have a shareholders agreement. One is to ensure that intellectual property is owned by the company. One is to prevent tax hitting you harder when you finally do try to put in place your shares and the value of the business has grown since you started it out. That can cause problems. And thirdly, just to make sure you've set in down in writing what your respective rights are, what you own and what your profit share is, and you know you don't have disputes later on about, no, it was 20%, I was having not 10, which has been known.
Mick, there are a whole host of ways to start marketing a new business and to help build your profile. What advice would you give a startup to try and do that in the early days of their business development?
Possibly the most important thing that I took from this your earlier session was how keen and heartening it was to hear that people were networking like crazy, going to the events, really working the room, trying to build their contacts and keep on with that contact going forward. Because I read a stat yesterday that said that only 2% of sales are made after one contact and 80% are made after five contacts, you know, with whoever the prospect is. So that thing about perseverance is obviously very important. We also talked earlier about the bootstrapping approach to working your business when you're trying to do everything you can yourself, keeping the costs down and so forth. There's a lot that you can do under that mindset to market your business. The sort of new rules of PR that people can use now, I suspect, are not unknown to the Bristol media community. And I'm thinking of the guerrilla marketing techniques, which are very low cost or no cost. Things like using the social networks. Probably the biggest ones for business are LinkedIn and eCademy. Get your profiles set up on those. Build your own networks and contacts. Get involved with the right groups on there, and you will make contact with people who will flow business to you at one stage or another. The other thing that's in the news at the moment, because of the celebrity people involved, of course, is Twitter. The Bristol media community is probably very digitally native and will be using this free micro-blogging service. I can tell you that for the new websites that we are launching, Marketing Donut and Startup Donut, we've used Twitter to great effect to drive interest in the sites before they launched, at launch and ongoing. There are real business benefits of using Twitter.
Mark, starting a business and growing it can be a hugely satisfying thing to do. What are the real positive sides to doing it and doing it alone?
I think the joy when you've got the momentum going, you're past that startup period, is when companies actually start to come to you. You've done all your marketing and the phone starts ringing. And obviously employing people is hugely rewarding as well. Building a team of people who all work well together, I'm still very proud of Mason Zimler, which is still a great agency, and people loved working there and people wanted to come and work there, and that's rewarding as well. And also from a managerial point of view, mentoring those people, getting the best out of people that you can find. Obviously, the other rewards, financial rewards, are great. If you grow a good business, it can be tremendously rewarding in that way.
You mentioned about mentoring people and staff and I guess being a leader. But it's also fair to say that not everybody who starts a business makes a good leader. What support is available for people who want to become better leaders?
We've got a skills arm of an organisation, a business linked skills arm, brokers, and they can introduce business leaders into leadership and management skills training courses, and that helps to differentiate that there is a difference between leadership and management, and somebody who's a good manager is not always a good leader. But with the right attitude and a willingness to learn and the right sort of training, then those good managers can become great leaders.
So it's something that we commonly find is someone starting a business, perhaps on their own, and they've got aspirations for growth, but they have a fear of having to be the person at the top of this big growing organisation, and they may not be the right person for that. And what we do is to help. One of the things we do is to help them understand that actually, if they plan for succession, plan for somebody taking over and taking it perhaps the second mile, they can go back to things they love to do and enjoy and are good at. So you need to balance the aspirations and the skill set and the comfort zone of the person founding the business. And actually, if you take that burden off their shoulders at day one, they've probably got more chance of being successful.
So what about guys who have started their business and maybe they've done it on their own, they don't have the support of a partner or the infrastructure around them of other people that they can go and bash ideas, talk to, and when times are tough, go and get a little bit of moral support. Nick, where could people go and how could people access that kind of guidance?
Okay, well, there are schemes around that provide formal mentors, the Prince's Trust, Set Squared and others. But mentors can be informal, can be somebody perhaps you've worked with, somebody you know, somebody you can get on with who, and it could be, you may not call it a formal mentoring relationship, but somebody that you know you can go for advice and will give you encouragement back. And that could then become a more formal relationship.
And Mark, what's the real value of having those people sat around your table?
I think it's just somebody to bounce ideas off. You talk about the single person. I mean, I started my business, there were two of us, and we had a non-exec director who was extremely useful for us, just to act as a kind of go-between between us and to help us see the light or see the wood for the trees.
Well, I think your advisors, your accountants, your lawyers, they can also, they've got huge experience of advising other clients in similar positions, watching them and helping them grow. And, we can have a wider relationship with them. It was mentioned earlier that their accountants didn't just do their books. They also help them, look ahead to what they should be planning for next.
Yeah, I think it's very valuable to have somebody who's not up to their eyeballs in the business, who can actually lift their head up and see perhaps a slightly bigger picture than the people who are in the business day to day. And whilst they might not necessarily sort of make decisions, they can actually feed information in and say, hey guys, have you thought about this, have you thought about that, can you see where you're going, maybe you need to think about some different routes around that. And I think they can be very, very valuable allies to the business.
I think that's a good point, and one of the things I've seen a lot of small businesses not do is take time to continually plan the business as time goes on, to take every couple of months, just stop for half a day, take a step back, work on the business as opposed to in the business. And that's a crucial thing to keep on track.
Okay, I'm going to put you all on the spot now and ask you to think on your feet. If somebody was sitting listening to this podcast and thinking about starting a business, what single bit of advice would you give them? Jonathan?
I'd say have a listen to the first half of this programme and just listen to the enthusiasm of the people there. They all professed a sort of huge enjoyment for what they were doing and regret, if anything, was not having done it earlier.
Nick?
Don't do it on your own and have the confidence to ask for help and get on and do it.
Cole?
I think make sure it's something you're going to enjoy doing.
Mick?
I think there's an awful lot of advice that you can find online. Then you can take that forward by going to one-to-many seminars or workshops and onwards to one-to-one sessions with the right advisor.
Roger?
I think I'd echo all those statements that everybody said, but really underpin it by saying you just got to go and do it.
And finally, Mark?
I'm just going to quote one of the greatest brands, just do it.
You've been listening to the Bristol Media Business Startup Podcast in association with BusinessLink. A huge thanks to Caroline Harris, Richard Wilson, Vicky Brophy, Dan Pidcock, Matt Loughran, Mark Mason, Roger Wilkins, Nick Sturge, Carl Dean, Jonathan Poole, and Mick Dickinson. And we'll be back next time talking about how to grow your business with a group of company founders who've managed to reach the enviable £1 million turnover mark. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Bristol Media Podcast in association with BusinessLink. You can now subscribe via iTunes to receive all new episodes automatically. If there's anything you'd like to comment on from today's podcast, drop us a line to info@bristolmedia.co.uk.